I did my own. That's what I wanted to do. Thank you. Are we close? One more. Oh, okay. I got it. All right, members, we're going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. In your packets, you have the meeting minutes from March 27th. If Representative Green wants to move those minutes.
Excuse me, yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Green moves the minutes for March 27th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are adopted. We have with us Representative Hamilton. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
I'm going to move your bill first, House File 3963, to be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment.
All right. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And we're seeking appropriation to correct safety, energy, and operational efficiency problems at the lab that's used by the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health. And the lab is focused on critical testing in the areas of emergency response, food safety, infectious diseases, homeland security, and environmental contaminants. And Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to our testifiers at this time.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Gary Horvath. I am the director of the Lab Services Division for the Department of Agriculture. As Representative Hamilton said, we provide analytical testing for our primary regulatory divisions within the department, the dairy and meat inspection, food and feed safety, pesticide and fertilizer management, and our plant protection division. And in addition to that, we're the primary lab that the Department of Natural Resources use for lakes and stream surveys, fish kills, and we also do the fish contamination surveys for PCB and mercury. We provide emergency testing during foodborne outbreaks, salmonella, E. coli, chemical spills involving ag chemicals, pesticides, fertilizers. We also do product tampering, plant disease outbreaks, food security events through some federal grants we have. We also do surveillance testing for food safety, just making sure we target areas we think might be problems, and we monitor that. We do the pesticide monitoring in water and surface and groundwater. Interstate marketing of milk, dairy product safety, meat safety, and then we provide other technical services to those divisions. So after a flood event on January 6, 2014, the Department of the Administration undertook a retro commissioning of the lab facility. The lab, Department of Health, I'm sure Joanna will talk about that, took the biggest brunt of that hit. We were lucky, but we still had a lot of disruption of service and some costs. And so the Department of Administration undertook the retro commissioning. And in that, the subsequent report identified $19.9 million, which is our request before you today, to address safety, energy, and operational efficiency problems within our facility. And I know you have the fact sheet, and there was a number of items found. Joanne has a better grasp of that. But the bottom line I'd like to talk about is that proper engineering control in this facility of air is vitally important to protection of staff and also associated with temperature control. It protects the science that we do. Issues of cross-contamination, exposure to the various pathogens that our department works with, chemical contaminants, the chemicals we use to analyze, these have to be controlled, and the confidence the staff has to have in the building so that they're comfortable working with these very oftentimes toxic chemicals is vitally important for the smooth running of the lab. And currently that is not the case. The retro commissioning identified pressure issues where air goes where it's not supposed to. We have odor issues. There's a lot of concern by staff, and this project addresses a lot of that. It can affect the outcome of tests. We have highly sophisticated instruments that need to have temperatures within a narrow window. Oftentimes in the like this time of year and in the fall when we're switching over from heating to cooling, the systems are insufficient and we see equipment will drop out and we'll have, you know, a day and a half, 2 days of sample preparation can be lost because the run fails overnight. And oftentimes these situations, last summer we had the dicamba issue. We were up to our eyeballs and we were having temperature problems with our instruments and we were under strict timelines to get data out. It makes it nearly impossible and affects the staff, and it's just a not a good situation. So this request will address some of those issues, and as a lab director, I'm fully aware of the expectations that this body has, the citizens have, my customers have, and the commissioner's office have on the lab to be there and be able to respond when we need to. And right now, the building is creating more problems that make it very difficult for us to meet the expectations. And so I ask you to support the bonding before you. Now I'll turn it over to Joanne.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Joanne Barkas. I am the director of the Public Health Laboratory Division at the Minnesota Department of Health. Gary already covered a lot of the nuts and bolts about what's going on and what ag does in the building. We are co-located. We do share some space, and we walk samples back and forth across, especially when we're working on a foodborne disease outbreak. I would say ag has the better end of the deal because they're testing food and we're testing what comes out of the people. In general, the Minnesota Department of Health Laboratory has three main subject areas. Infectious disease testing, so we, you know, as already been mentioned, we do foodborne testing for foodborne illness. We do emergency preparedness testing for bioterrorism response. We actually had a case of inhalational anthrax in 2011, which we investigated. It was naturally occurring. It was not an act of terrorism, but that's the kind of thing we do. We're the only laboratory in the state that does rabies testing. We actually were doing Ebola testing during the Ebola outbreak in Africa. And we do a variety of other testing, including vaccine preventable diseases. So it's been a big flu season. We do measles testing, that sort of thing.
Sounds like a place nobody wants to go.
Well, that's why the building is so important, the safety features, and especially the airflow in the building when we're working with infectious diseases. The newborn screening testing is a little more pleasant. We do screen more than 70,000 babies annually for now 61 different disorders. Two of those disorders are actually screened in the nursery, but the data is reported to us, and we do follow-up. And every year we identify probably between 350 and 400 infants with a disease that once it's detected can be treated, and that improves the outcomes for these children and their families. The other area that we do testing in is environmental testing. We are the primacy laboratory for the Safe Drinking Water Act, so we do EPA mandated testing for drinking water. We test surface waters as well. We work mostly with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency doing testing for them, so you're probably aware of the issues with perfluorochemicals, and we do testing for those. And we also do chemical terrorism preparedness. We're what's referred to as a level one chemical terrorism preparedness laboratory. So we're funded for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to be a surge capacity laboratory in the event that we actually have a chemical terrorism attack, which I always thought would be kind of unlikely, but based on what we've seen in the UK recently, maybe it's not that far-fetched. With regard to these building repairs, as Gary mentioned, we took the biggest hit, I think, in 2014 when we had the great flood where we had multiple pipes burst. We lost a $500,000 piece of equipment. Our repairs were over $1 million. And it was that event that kind of triggered a deeper dive into the bowels of the building, if you will, to see what else might be problematic. One of the things that's most vexing for us is in the environmental laboratory and on the health side of the building. The ductwork is deteriorating. It's the branch ducts off of our fume hoods, right, so the people are doing testing the inside a hood, which helps protect the worker, and then the fumes go up into the hood and up into the ductwork. And the stainless, they're stainless steel branch ducts, but the rest of the ductwork is galvanized steel, and that galvanized steel is rusting. And there's actually visible holes in that ductwork. And as Gary mentioned, the airflow in the building is really, really important. When we're working with infectious disease agents, we want the airflow, the air being sucked into those laboratories, because we don't want anything blowing out. And it's extremely dicey in this building to get things balanced. Our facilities people sometimes have to shut things down and tell us not to work in the hoods until they get things balanced. I am not a building engineer, so I can't really speak to some of the technical issues, but my understanding is some of the valves are all of our valves are pneumatic, and they're less expensive than the electronic valves, which they'd like to replace them with, but in the long term, they cost more to replace and repair, and they're much more difficult to control. Some of the other issues that are being addressed in this bonding request is the installation of uninterruptible power supply. As it is now, not all of our electrical circuits are uninterruptible, so that means, as Gary mentioned, if an instrument is running overnight and the power goes out, or even during the day, that instrument will shut down. They'll lose the entire run. Sometimes that's days worth. Sometimes they're irreplaceable samples. So that's why it's critically important to support this, if at all possible, with funding requests. Yeah. I'm done. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
You're giving me the
We appreciate that. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? If not, members, I did want to mention to you, if we cannot get through the schedule, we will meet this evening. So, Representative Ward.
Thank you. Very quickly, Madam Chair. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to tour the building, and it was a really powerful experience. The work that you do there and the need for quality support in the infrastructure in your building is really wonderful, and I mean, it's important. So I support the bill. Thanks.
Okay. Representative Hamilton, closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee, ask for your support.
As with that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3963, without recommendation, be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is on its way. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We have Representative Poston. And as he's making his way, I'm going to move that House File 4105 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. And Representative Poston, excuse me, to your bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. House File 4105 is asking for a capital investment of $2,157,000 for the Armory in Wadena, Minnesota. I will let Mr. Kerr talk about what that entails, but I just want to say something about this particular armory. On June 17th in 2010, some of you may remember that an EF4 tornado went through Wadena and leveled pretty much the entire town, or half of the town. And this building was significant during that event, because that is where the community gathered and where a lot of the community work was managed from after that event. That was the day that we had 48 tornadoes in Minnesota and set the new tornado record for a single day in Minnesota. Mr. Kerr?
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And again, for the record, I'm Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And Madam Chair, I won't belabor the points I made in my previous testimony with regard to the other projects. Wadena is the fifth of six that we're going to brief you on. And as Representative Postman said, this is a 62-year-old facility, and we've never done a major renovation. This is one where we have done some piecemeal work, but it's time to go and do a major renovation so we can get another 30 years out of this building on the back end. And subject to that, it is on page 10 in your handouts if you're interested in the details, and I would subject myself to any questions on either this project or any of the previously briefed.
Awesome. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify on this bill? All right. Members, any questions? All right. With that, Representative Poston, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 4105 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Your bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And Mr. Kerr, I'm going to have you stay right there if you don't mind. Okay. I think what we will do, all right, we'll pause on this one. I'm sorry, Mr. Kerr. We'll just pause on that one. Representative Bliss. Members, I'm going to move that House File 3018 laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. Representative Bliss, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, today I'm presenting HF 3018. This bill created a task force to study charitable gambling taxation in Minnesota. I'm sure each of you have at least one organization in your district that does charitable gambling and donates those proceeds to the local community. There is an issue with the amount that these organizations pay in taxes. This bill set up a task force with legislators and stakeholders to drill down into the data and bring recommendations to us for the next budget cycle so we can make informed decisions on their tax policy. With me today is Al Lund, the Executive Director for Allied Charities, to give you a brief testimony and help answer any questions.
Welcome, Mr. Lund. You can state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alan Lund. I'm the Executive Director of Allied Charities in Minnesota. We represent all the licensed gaming charities in Minnesota. Charitable gaming has been around for 73 years now, starting in church basements. Across the state, we're in virtually every corner of the state and providing needed relief where it's needed. The current combined receipts tax structure was enacted in 2012, and the world and our industry has changed significantly since then. To ensure the long-term viability of charitable gaming and to make sure the legislature has all the necessary facts to have an informed discussion on our tax situation, we are asking for this task force to evaluate the current tax structure. This is a critical step to ensure the robust and thoughtful discussion of our industry and make sure these organizations can continue to give back to their communities. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? Not. Members, are there any questions on this bill? Representative Deborah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just a statement. This is something, this whole charitable gambling issue is something I've been working on for several years, especially for American Legions, VFWs, Lions Clubs, and so forth. And many of our Legions and VFWs are leading, and they're not, because of the increase in taxes that they have to pay under charitable gambling, why should they even do this? So this is something we need a task force to, thank you, Representative Bliss, for bringing this forward. We need a task force to really take a look at the issue and make recommendations to the legislature. This is something that we need to do. So thank you.
All right. Mr. Lund, I have a question. So in the bill, you've got $10,000 that is allocated to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Can you tell me how you arrived at that number,
Madam Chair, I'm told that that's the figure that is used for task forces, that $10,000 is the amount that is needed by the LLC.
Okay. All right. Any other questions, members? If not, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3018 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. And with that, thank you, Representative Bliss. Thank you, Mr. Lund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
Yep. I saw Representative Heintzman. Did he disappear on me? Oh, there we go. Excellent. Members, I'm going to move that House File 4109 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just have a proposal here for a significant amount of work that needs to be done to the Armory in Brainerd, and I have brought a testifier along who I'll turn this over to.
Mr. Kerr?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. Again, I won't go over the common stuff, but this would be slide 10 in the packet that was provided to the members. Mm-hmm. The Brainerd Armory is one of our newer facilities. It's only 29 years old. but it is in need of renovation. It was still constructed in an era when we didn't have full gender neutrality in the National Guard, and so we had to do some renovation there and put the additional things in that we talked about in previous testimony. And if there are any questions about the project, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? Members, questions? All right. I am going to closing comments, Representative Heinklin.
Oh, no. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Go ahead and please continue.
Okay. I'm going to redo my motion that House File 4109 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Your bill is on its way.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Okay, members, we're going to hear Representative Lunan, House File 3217. And as he's coming down, I'm going to move House File 3217 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. And welcome to the committee, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And where would this bill be going to?
It's going to be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Committee.
Wonderful. Because we're in the process of going through this bill for the Racing Commission, we got just a couple of things. I would be more comfortable if we iron them out, but we'd like to go through the bill anyway. That the Racing Commissioner, Dr. B. Pasquale, I'd say without getting the mic wet, sorry. To go through the aspects of the bill, because regardless of what I say, he's a compliance guy. He's going to tell it to you all over again. So to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you and staff. If time were allotted based on fiscal impact, I'd be done by now. But I will highlight a few provisions in the bill that I think are important for you to understand. First of all, we're asking the legislature to create a subcategory of vendors. We license all vendors of goods and supplies, services to the racetracks, but there's a special category that requires higher scrutiny, more oversight, and those are racing and gaming-related vendors that provide equipment, the tote board, and other important equipment to the tracks that are really essential to the integrity of racing. They require a lot of background checks. Some of them should have bonding requirements, and we check their equipment software now and then. So there's just heightened costs to the commission, and eventually we will have a rule that will define this category and impose more requirements on them to get licensed in Minnesota. The second change is we provide this annual report to you each year as required by law. Things don't really change that much at the commission from year to year, either our personnel, our budget situation, or otherwise. So we would propose that this be provided to the legislature at the beginning of the biennium so you have a good picture of what's happening at the commission. If there's any issues, major bills, financial issues, we can address those during the two-year session of the legislature. Right now, I testify every year at oversight committees. We use social media. Our public meetings are on our website and available for people to attend or listen to. So we're communicating in many different ways with the legislature and the governor's office now. The third change modifies appeal rights and disciplinary matters before the commission. It actually streamlines things in such a way that are of benefit to both the horse people and the commission. What we're trying to do is right-size the due process based on the severity of the situation, and we're also trying to give the commission authority that extends beyond that which the stewards have right now. The way it exists right now is the stewards can impose, that is the officials, can impose up to 90 days and $5,000 on licensees, and anything more than that is a contested case, which has to go before an administrative law judge and may take months or even more than a year to resolve. We think the commission should have jurisdiction of matters that are referred to the commission by the stewards so that we could have a panel of commissioners hear the evidence, make a ruling, and then the licensee has the option of whether to incur the cost and the time of a contested case before an administrative law judge, and we give the licensees that option in the bill. We're also limiting the duration of summary suspensions for particularly serious situations that may impose health or safety risks at the track. Right now, the statute allows us to have a summary suspension that goes indefinitely. This bill would limit that to 90 days and provide procedures by which people can appeal that on an expedited basis, and that's the way it's typically handled in any event. The fourth change is the advanced deposit wagering providers who were authorized to do business in Minnesota 2 years ago. They're having difficulty paying us within 7 days, which the statute requires. At the end of the month, they have to audit all the wagering in Minnesota on these platforms and then pay us in accordance with the statute. And right now, they're often late, and 15 days would allow them to pay us timely, and it is of no consequence as far as the commission's concerned. The fifth change would require the card room revenues that are earmarked for purses are to be used for purses at the licensed racetrack and not taken off the track to unlicensed facilities that are not regulated or licensed by the commission. This is typically county fair racing. It has always been the legislative intent since card rooms were passed in 1999 that was to generate purse money for use at the tracks. And the standard bred people have begun to use some of that money off track, and the commission has said that that's not consistent with the legislative intent, and so we would like to clarify that the money is to be used at the tracks. And the last change is a year or two ago you authorized us to create a special revenue fund for racehorse retirement. And when we went to give grants of that money for horses coming off the track last year, we were advised by the Department of Administration and MMB that we were not given express authority to spend the money. We only were given authority to hold the money. And so we got a one-year reprieve. We granted $47,000 in grants this year to help retired racehorses, and we said we'd come to the legislature and clarify your intent that you not only want us to hold the money, but you want us to spend it for the purpose which you described in the statute. So those are the changes, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Great. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? I've got Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the director. Does this also include, will this bill affect harness racing, like running aces?
Madam Chair, Representative, it affects all breeds and both tracks. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Emmer. Representative Nash Podine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A quick question on the clarifying the card club revenue set aside for purses. What does that mean? When you said off track, could you just explain that to me, please?
Sure.
Madam Chair, Representative, 241.35 says that from the monies that the tracks hold when people go into the card rooms and gamble, they are allowed to hold up to a certain percentage. The statute says that the first $6 million, 10% should be set aside for purses. The second $6 million, 14% should be set aside from purses. So the more money that's played in the card rooms, the more the purses grow. In the statute, the legislature said it's the intent of the legislature the proceeds of card playing be used to improve the horse racing industry by improving purses, period. And it said if at any time we think that policy is not being served, we should come to the legislature and make recommended changes to the statute. We know from listening to the hearings in 1999 and from reading other parts of the statute that the legislative intent was not that that money would be used to go to county fair races that are not licensed by the commission. It was to be used at the track. Similarly, simulcast wagering that's run at the track, in that part of the statute, the legislature says to be used for purses at the licensed racetrack, that it omitted that language in the card room section. And we know that's what the legislature intended. So it's simply a clarifying amendment to say that the money generated at Canterbury in the card room gets used for Canterbury purses. The money at running aces in the card room gets used for running aces purses. It doesn't go to Wheaton at a two-day county fair when that fair is not licensed by the commission. There are other sources of revenue for those county fairs, but the card rooms are not the right source of revenue.
Representative Nash Purdy.
And so how was it that those funds were going to these county fairs and why?
Mr. DePasquale.
Madam Chair, Representative, they were going to county fairs by virtue of purse agreements between the track and the horse persons groups. Each year they negotiate purse money and how it's going to be allocated for various races, stakes races and otherwise. And running aces and the standard bred people had negotiated that $250,000 would go to county fair racing. Historically, county fair racing was licensed by the commission. But when it's non-paramutual, it's not licensed. and the commission expressed concerns that so much money was going to an area of racing that we don't regulate or license, and that was inconsistent with the legislative intent. There's other sources in the statute for purse money for non-county fair, non-paramutual racing, but this isn't it.
Representative? Mr. DePasquale, when you're talking about that, so I assume this agreement, was that in place in 1999, or when did that first when did county fairs first start getting this revenue for the horse races that are held there?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure. It predated my arrival at the commission in 2013. Historically, as you know, county fair racing has gone on for 100 years. And when the legislature created this law, it said that Class D licenses are for paramutual county fairs. It didn't say anything about non-paramutual county fairs. So sometime before I arrived, so 5 or 10 years ago, they decided it was too burdensome to have paramutual wagering at county fairs. There's just not enough people. You've got to get the tote company there. So they just decided no more paramutual. And then they negotiated with the track to put first money into county fair racing. And there are benefits. I should not say that there's no benefits. This extends the season for horse people. It reaches into the rural areas. It's part of county fairs. I'm not intending in any way to say that county fair racing is not important in Minnesota, but we need to source it with proper revenues from the proper source.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine's just more of a committee question for during our off season. It'd be kind of neat to have a tour. We had an opportunity once to tour the Running Aces up in Representative Detmer's or Hackbar's district, who it was at the time. I'm sorry, I don't know who the current member is.
Representative Barr.
So it would just be interesting. There's so much more to these businesses than I ever realized when he actually got on the property. It's just, it's really fascinating. And of course, horse issues and is a big industry in Minnesota. If you found time, it'd be kind of neat to have an opportunity to visit during the off season or whatever you would call it.
We'd be happy to have you during the season.
Thank you. Right. Seeing no other questions, Representative Lohner.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And like the testifier said, item five, we're still working on. All parties are talking about that. As far as clarity, I'm going to be right up front, and I do not expect that we are going to have agreement, but everyone will know what we're doing, and they will know why we're doing it. And like the doctor said, there are other sources of revenue that are going there. I just want to make sure everyone's on the same page in it, so we're going to still work on this a little bit. As far as coming out for a tour, happy to bring you down to the land of big fun at Canterbury, and actually the town right next to it, Savage, Minnesota, is named after the owner of Dan Patch, the greatest trotting horse ever in America, and that's where he trained, was in Savage, back when it was called Glendale, Minnesota. We'd be happy to have you guys down.
Thank you. All right, with that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 43217 be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Committee.
Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Lunan. Thank you, Mr. DePasquale.
Thank you.
All right, so members, the last bill that we've got on our docket is House File 4016. That's my bill. I'm going to move it to be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Committee. Members, basically what this bill does is it has the Department of MMB. They're going to put together a website that people, if they are interested in contributing to the state, they would be able to do that. It is a very short bill. I know Mr. Pollard is here, and I didn't know if he wanted to come and comment on it. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Pollard, Legislative Director for Minnesota Management and Budget. We don't have much to say on the bill. We're open to the idea. We think it has merit. We're in the process of creating a plan to see what we can come up with. Committee staff was nice enough to forward us a couple of examples of some landing pages in the federal government and what they do. The biggest concern, obviously, would be security, so we will work with our web developers and minute staff to make sure that that piece is taken care of. But outside of that, I would say if anybody has any suggestions or input on what they would like it to look like or the messaging around it, we would love to have your input.
Great. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? not members. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a fiscal note attached to this bill? Or will there be a cost associated with this?
Mr. Pollard, did you want to comment?
Madam Chair, I don't know if anybody has requested a fiscal note to date. I don't believe so. I would have to check with our IT staff. I can't imagine that there would be, as we obviously pay for server space already and have the staff available that could create this.
Okay.
Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Beyond creating the website and managing that for the potential cost, I'm glad to hear that there probably wouldn't be any, but how would there be some cost involved in actually managing the gifts? And how would that be structurally handled? And then what kind of cost would that potentially involve?
Mr. Pollard.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Ward, I don't believe so. Again, I'm not the CFO of MMB. We can certainly check for you. The reason I say that I don't believe so is because Minnesota already has a gift statute where citizens, non-citizens could make a gift to the state, and we process that. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. When people do send the state a gift, it is usually for a specific purpose. They request that the money be put towards a particular program that they care about. So I don't believe that there would be any additional cost in maintaining it simply because we already have the statute in place.
Representative Ward? Anyone else? Representative Driscoll.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Topic's sort of near and dear to my heart. I believe that we have done this with pensions as well, that people can make gifts to the state pension plans if they wanted, or to allow them to designate on their life insurance policy one or more of our pension plans as beneficiary if they so chose.
All right. Anybody else? Thank you, Mr. Pollard. Appreciate it. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 4016 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. And with that, members, we're going to probably have a long day tomorrow. We're getting bills referred to us left and right, so we'll try to get through them as quickly as possible. And with that, members, we are adjourned.